Hello, and welcome to this AAT podcast looking at the new HM Revenue and Customs information and inspection powers and the new penalty regime. My name's Gary Brothers, and I head up the tax investigations team at RSM Bentley Jennison. From April this year, and in the context of tax inquiry or investigation work, we will see the biggest changes to the way both we and HMRC deal with inquiries and investigations since the introduction of income tax self-assessment in 1997 and corporation tax self-assessment a couple of years later. The changes, in some instances, are relatively small, and if it were they alone, I would not suggest this was such a significant change. But at the other end of the spectrum, there are big, whole-scale changes, or indeed completely new approaches. On balance, then, I do believe the changes will affect all of us in practice and will result in a significant change to how we deal with this aspect of our clients' affairs. So the first question, then, and one that accompanies any significant change in any area, tax or otherwise, is why change? Well, the very simple answer would be to point to the merger of Customs and Excise and the Inland Revenue in 2005. However, the reasons go deeper and further than simply the merger itself. With the merger of the two departments in 2005, it was accepted both within those two departments, within the profession, and perhaps more importantly still, within government, that in addition to the significant cost savings that the merger was anticipated to deliver, the merger also presented an opportunity never before available to completely overhaul and modernise the UK's tax authority, its revenue-generating machine. It was always accepted that there would need to be a review and an alignment of the powers available to and used by the new department. Perhaps what was more surprising was the brief given to HMRC, which was to be radical and to come up with some radical ideas as part of this review. Following the review of HMRC powers, HMRC has been and continues to be keen to trumpet the new regime as encouraging a behavioural or cultural shift within the taxpaying population. Quite how realistic or achievable that behavioural shift will be remains to be seen, but there is no doubting the resolve of HMRC in attempting to secure this outcome. Whilst not a mission statement as such, the ongoing mantra of HMRC currently, and in relation to the new powers, is that HMRC should support those who seek to comply and come down hard on those who seek an unfair advantage through non-compliance. Now, those are HMRC's own words. Considering that statement fully, that's a clear, concise and explicit message to the UK taxpaying population. So, let me say it again for you. HMRC should support those who seek to comply, but come down hard on those who seek an unfair advantage through non-compliance. A clear statement indeed, and one which, I would suggest, pretty clearly draws the battle lines. Taking that statement slightly further, HMRC also say that they interpret this statement to mean passionate in support, relentless in pursuit. And again, I'll repeat that. They say, passionate in support, relentless in pursuit. So, what HMRC, following a detailed consultation process, hope to achieve is, in their words, a behavioural change in taxpayers, advisers, and also HMRC staff, with the hope that the new powers will improve the inquiry experience, excuse my cynicism, but that is the language, making inquiries less confrontational, more collaborative and faster, with a reduction of costs in the process. As I said earlier, only time can tell how successful HMRC are in achieving these lofty ambitions. In the new regime, there are two pieces of legislation that I will detail and discuss. The first is contained in Schedule 36 of the 2008 Finance Act and deals with the new information and inspection powers. The second is contained mainly in Schedule 24 of the 2007 Finance Act and deals with the new penalty regime. So, turning then to Schedule 36 Finance Act 2008, there are a number of constituent elements being Part 1, which deals with HMRC's powers to obtain information and documents. Part 2, which is very new and covers HMRC's power to inspect business premises. Part 3 covers further powers. Part 4 details the safeguards and restrictions on the use of the powers, so we will talk about that. Part 5 covers appeals against information notices. Part 6 is referred to as special cases. Part 7 details penalties for failing to comply with the provisions of this legislation. Part 8 covers offences. And Part 9 includes miscellaneous provisions and interpretations. So, as you can see, there's a large amount of new legislation for us to have to become familiar with. So, what does the legislation say, and how do we expect it to operate in practice? Well, the obvious place to start is at the beginning, paragraph 1. And we can see, even with that, the extent to which this new legislation is very much out with the old and in with the new. Paragraph 1 deals with taxpayer notices and, in the words of the legislation, requires a person to provide information or produce documents reasonably required for the purpose of checking, and I'll stop there, because there's not much change there so far, and if the legislation concluded by saying, checking the tax return, you could be forgiven for wondering what all the fuss was about. However, this legislation does not conclude by saying, checking the tax return, but rather, the taxpayer is required to provide information or documents to check their tax position. And that's the wording of the legislation. This is a completely new concept, the tax position. Helpfully, however, tax position is defined at paragraph 64 of the legislation, which says, a tax position is a person's position as regards any tax and includes past, present and future liabilities, penalties, claims, elections, applications and notices, deductions or repayments of tax. And, having considered that legislation, we also need to understand what tax is defined as. Tax is statutorily defined at paragraph 63 as income tax, capital gains tax, corporation tax, value-added tax, and relevant foreign tax. So, for the first time we see some interesting new areas, particularly the tax position concept and the fact that it relates to past, present and future liabilities. HMRC are currently staying relatively tight-lipped on what this means or how it will operate, but that is a pretty significant move away from a review and inquiry process based on checking filed and historical returns as we have now. It is pure speculation on my part, but the inclusion of present liabilities would seem to allow an opportunity for real-time tax checks, something HMRC has spoken about for a while. As for future liabilities, that is slightly more interesting and possibly going to be confined to tax planning transactions, but it is certainly not clear currently. So, with the move into more uncertain new waters, what, if any, defences exist? I said in the overview at the start that there were indeed defences, and I'll look now at the main ones which exist. The first defence, and bearing similarities to the pre-April 2009 legislation, is that at paragraph 18, requiring that information or documents sought must be in the power or possession of the person from whom they are sought. To use my often quoted illustrations of what this means, possession is very easy. The person owns what is sought and it is accessible to them. That is in their possession and HMRC can require its provision. Power is more difficult and is the concept that, whilst the person from whom it is sought does not have it in their own possession, they can compel, and the emphasis is on compulsion, the person who does have it to give to the person subject to the HMRC request. The next defence is in paragraph 19 and gives exemption to providing appeal or journalistic material, and I would expect appeal material to be more regularly seen, and this allows the subject to not hand over items to HMRC where those items relate to an appeal. There are also a number of other statutorily enacted safeguards that I don't intend to cover in this podcast, but they cover such areas as old documents at paragraph 20, deceased persons at paragraph 22, auditor's papers at paragraph 24, and so on. I would recommend a detailed read of the defences if it is felt appropriate to access and utilise the defences. For me, however, potentially the most pointed new power is HMRC's new inspection power within Part 2 of the Act. Of course, in the indirect tax arena, customs had the right of inspection for years. My indirect tax and VAT colleagues are asking me why I'm so excited about this. Well, for me, as essentially a direct tax practitioner, the fuss is simply that we now have something we did not have before. And if the aim of the new legislation, as I said at the start of this podcast, was to improve the experience, making it more collaborative and less confrontational, then this power may not help. So, is this a case of an Englishman's home no longer being his castle? Let's look at it in any event. The new inspection legislation allows for both announced and unannounced visits, although HMRC currently state that unannounced visits will be reserved for exceptional cases where announcing the visit may prejudice the assessment of tax, and they go on to say that they anticipate the vast use will be down the announced visit route. For an announced visit to take place, written notice will be given at least 7 days in advance. Recognising some concern at these developments, HMRC also clarify that there are approvals safeguards that will exist, namely that for announced visits, approval will be required by an authorised officer within HMRC, and where an unannounced visit is planned, the approval process is outside of HMRC, with responsibility for approval being within the first tier tribunal, which is the replacement body for the commissioners. There are, again, some restrictions and practical considerations. Firstly, any inspection has to state the person whose tax position is being checked and any inspections can only then relate to that person. So this avoids HMRC conducting any fishing expeditions when they are on a client's business. Business premises, documents and assets, all of which can be inspected, are statutorily defined, which gives some clarity and some comfort. The legislation allows HMRC to enter business premises, but the legislation does not allow them to force entry. There is, however, further statutory guidance should the business owner not be on the premises, but again, forced entry is explicitly precluded. Finally, the legislation allows inspection only. The legislation does not permit search, which by definition is the active sourcing of information, etc., rather than the passive receipt of the same. Nor does the legislation authorise or permit HMRC to interview anybody. Caution should be exercised, however, as there are penalties of an initial fixed £300, followed by a daily maximum of up to £60 per day, should there be destruction or obstruction. Moving now to the new penalty regime, for income tax, corporation tax, VAT, pay-as-you-earn, construction industry scheme and national insurance contributions, the legislation applies to return periods starting on or after 1st of April 2008, where the due date for filing is on or after the 1st of April 2009. For all other taxes dealt with by HMRC, the same penalty legislation will apply exactly 1 year later. Again, we very much have an out with the old and in with the new approach. Completely gone are penalties based on a 100% maximum but discounted back to the eventual penalty amount for disclosure, cooperation and seriousness. The first area of review for new penalties will be to assess absolutely solely the behaviour leading to the lost revenue, with those behaviours being one of a mistake despite reasonable care, which will attract no penalty. So that's a mistake despite reasonable care, which attracts no penalty. The second is a failure to take reasonable care, which will result in a minimum zero penalty and a maximum 30% penalty. So let me say that again. A failure to take reasonable care will result in a minimum 0% penalty and a maximum 30% penalty. The next category is a deliberate understatement, which attracts a 20% minimum penalty and a 70% maximum penalty. And I'll say that again for you. That's a deliberate understatement, which attracts a 20% minimum penalty and a 70% maximum penalty. The final category is classified as a deliberate understatement but with concealment, and this attracts a minimum 30% penalty and a maximum 100% penalty. And once again, I'll repeat that for you. That's a deliberate understatement but with concealment, attracting a minimum 30% penalty and a maximum 100% penalty. So, some interesting changes, including a statutorily defined ceiling and floor to the penalty amounts. Movement from the maximums to the minimums that I've given will be as a result of the quality and the speed of the disclosure made by the taxpayer. Interestingly, however, and for me as a tax investigations practitioner, there is still a very subjective test. The very subjective test for me will now be the categories that any tax failure falls into. So, for example, where a loss arises as a deliberate understatement, can it be argued that this failure was no more than a failure to take reasonable care? And what are the lines drawn between a deliberate understatement and a failure to take reasonable care? As I say, a subjective test. The one interesting aspect with the new penalties is that the old regime will also remain sitting side by side with the new regime, and those penalties will apply to filings, that's tax returns, company tax returns, etc., that have been filed pre-April 2009. Due to the fraud window assessing rules within the legislation, which allow HMRC a 20-year assessing window, HMRC do also accept that there will be two penalty regimes running side by side until 2029, i.e. 20 years' time, when any claims for penalties under the old regime will be fully time-barred and extinguished. Hopefully, I will have retired by then as well, so won't have to worry about this issue. So, that concludes my overview and guidance on the new information and inspection powers and the new penalty regime. The one thing I would suggest is a detailed read for any practitioner who feels they have clients who may be facing tax inspection from April 2009, which in my experience means most practitioners. I sincerely hope that this podcast has been of some use to you, and I wish you well in your inspections and penalty negotiations. Thank you.